All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode. Dr. Paul here. I have third-year medical student Adam Nessam joining me today. Adam, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Crazy times we're going through right now. But, you know,
definitely is.
We're all doing our best to try and adjust. So we're going to talk a lot about what you offer students through your company, the Pre-Med Consultants, which I'm really, really excited to talk about. But before we dive in, can you just tell our audience a little bit about yourself, where you're at currently in your journey?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So right now, like I think you mentioned, I'm at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. I'm just finishing up my third year of medical school. We're actually finishing a virtual pediatrics rotation because of everything going on. We had to switch virtual like everyone else in the country. And then after that, I'm actually going to be taking a gap year between my third and fourth year. I'll be doing research in orthopedic spine. And I'm also going to like explore a couple other electives that I was interested in. And yeah, just really kind of like build my application and take the year to see my options. And then I'm going to continue on with fourth year and then apply to residency soon. And then while I'm doing that, I'm sure, which we'll get into, I've also been doing a lot of pre-med mentoring for students.
Yeah, which is, I think, awesome. So definitely something that a lot of people need. Before we dive in, how do you feel doing virtual rotations, like you said, virtual peds, how do you feel that's impacting your ability to better understand how pediatrics works? Do you think there's a negative impact there? Yeah.
I definitely think you lose some things, like the ability to, especially for pediatrics, like most of my rotations, I was seeing adult patients. The only real peds experience I got was like a couple of patients I saw in my family medicine rotation.
Yeah.
So I think like the ability to like learn how to navigate speaking to like children and their parents at the same time. And also the exam is different for pediatrics. And a lot of the content itself is different. Now that you can kind of study just like you're studying for the shelf or any other clerkship. But getting that like in-person exposure, I definitely think you lose a little bit of that. Luckily, what our school is doing is we're gonna have some sort of in-person like clerkship requirement. Mm-hmm. So once things do start to go back to somewhat of normal and we're back in the hospitals, I'll be doing like at least a 2-week rotation in pediatrics. And that'll be like a pass fail thing. Just like right now, it's actually pass fail clerk or credit fail, actually, I think is the way they're doing it. So I'm excited for that. And hopefully like I'll actually be going in knowing more content than I would usually go in knowing starting a rotation because mm-hmm. we've just done like yeah. all of the like content and shelf and stuff beforehand. So we'll see how that plays out.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you think it's going to turn a lot of people off if they've missed? So let's say you were interested in peds and you were doing this virtually. You think it would sort of turn you off to the specialty a little bit? Or do you still feel like you're getting at least some sort of an idea of what it would be like?
That's a good question. I don't think you get a great idea of what it's like from the virtual rotation. With that said, I know like a lot of my peers who like they've known going into this rotation, for example, like they were interested in pediatrics.
Yeah.
And so they're like they've gotten some information on like what to do if, you know, that was the case and like additional like sub eyes that you can do once we get back into the hospital. So I don't think it's like a turn off to the specialty. I just think it's harder to really tell, like, is this what I want to do with the rest of my life from the virtual clerkship?
That makes sense. That makes sense. Hopefully, what do you have next?
So this is my last rotation of third year. So I just have to take the shelf, and then I actually have to take the family medicine shelf because when all the changes were happening, or when we were all moving from like in person to online, and like everything was being shut down, that was exactly when I was supposed to take the final, so I have to like make that up. Yeah. And then after that, I'm gonna be on the gap year. Nice. So I'll be in the clinic like working with my PI who works in orthopedic spine, and then I'll eventually be doing, I'll do that 2-week pediatric clerkship I talked about.
Sure.
And then fourth, I'll do like the generally normal fourth year rotations once that comes around.
Awesome. All right, cool. Now I'd like to talk about the pre-med consultant. So before we dive in, I have a bunch of questions. Tell me what made you decide to start this company and just give us a little overview of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically I went to Cornell once, and I always liked like mentoring, teaching. I was doing tutoring there. I was a TA, and so once I took the MCAT there, I had in mind that I was always going to try and get into like tutoring for that. Just kind of like I enjoy doing it and a way to kind of make some side cash. So I started working for one of like the major test prep companies, and teaching like their courses. Sometimes I would like drive to other universities to teach courses there, and I was kind of like working my way up. And I thought it was good. And then when I got to medical school, a few things changed. One, I realized some of the ways that I was studying, even for my own MCAT, were just not the most effective methods of studying. And I kind of saw that from like really looking at the way students study for like USMLE and like really taking like a question-based approach with like spaced repetition using Anki flashcards or whatever like students are doing. And I found like that's just way more effective. I noticed that that is not really something that pre-meds know a lot about. And like most pre-meds are just, I'm going to study like a bunch of textbooks for months and then start taking practice tests close to the test date and then hope I'm going to get a great score, which generally for a lot of students, when they follow that format, doesn't happen. And I also found that I really like coaching students and like being a mentor long term, which is not something I was able to get at this other company. And like I really enjoyed like working with students, basically, you know, talking about like what classes to take, like kind of my like certain things would be, I'd be like, look, if you want to start doing better, like start waking up earlier and putting in the time before everyone else is up, like kind of things just like to improve them as a person and student in general. And I didn't see any program out there that is offering that type of like personalized instruction and coaching that's not just like a 2 month MCAT course and then you're done type thing. And so I was like, screw it, I'm gonna start one. And so then I eventually like left, started kind of like building up this social media following a little bit, which like a
Which is
lot of
a
people see now is like thought I was trying to like be like a medical influencer or whatever. It was really just because I was trying to get my name out there, and then that whole thing happened. And so then I started the Pre-Med Consultants with really the goal was to make a program that helps students every single step of the pre-med process, whether that you're just starting out as a freshman all the way until you literally get that medical school acceptance.
So you could potentially be taking someone for a full 4 years.
Absolutely. I've had students with me right now that are on like year 2.5, 3 years,
Wow.
that I've been helping them since they started freshman year.
And do they have the ability to sort of reach out to you with just general questions and things like that? Or do you have like a set curriculum, like we meet once a week online? How does that work?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So yeah, they do have the ability to reach out to me at any time, basically. And as we've grown a little bit, I basically got a separate student phone number. So that only my students have. And basically they can text me whenever they want, whatever they need. If something comes up and it seems like important, like I'll just call them. If it's like something I can handle by text, then you know, we'll do that. But I also, what I have is like a monthly group coaching meeting that I usually will focus on like whatever the most important thing for that month is. So let's say like right now, a ton of my students are studying for the MCAT. So we're doing like in those meetings, mainly like MCAT strategy stuff, kind of talking about like how to tweak their study habits for that, how to study right now, like at home when you're with your family and it's distracting. And then, but also what I do is I'll host frequent office hours, study office hours. So like, especially right now when it's been tough for students to like do work during the day, I've been having everyone get up at like 6:30 in the morning for the first 3 hours of the day. We'll all hop on a Zoom meeting like this, and it'll mainly be focused studying. Like I'll play like some study music, and then like we'll go for 25, 30 minutes at a time, come back and take a break. And then during those breaks is like an opportunity to ask me any questions that they have, or like I always will stay after. So like basically anytime you need to reach me, like you're able to do so,
That's
which is
pretty
nice.
sweet. I like that idea of just getting on and making sure they're there doing the work, but not actually having to really do anything. It's sort of like an accountability factor, right? It's a
That's
great idea.
exactly what I call it. I say it's forced accountability. Honestly, once they're going into their studying, I'm studying for step two.
Yeah, no, that's
so it
great.
works out for me too.
It's like it's le definitely the ultimate leverage of your time. I love it.
Yeah, this is like a relatively recent thing that I started doing, and I realized like it helps me, it helps them. So I've just been adding it more and more frequently, and they love it. I'll just be like, we have like a group chat. So I'll just be like, all right, who wants office hours tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Wow.
And then yeah, and I've noticed I actually start, I have to go start going longer because a lot of our West Coast students are like, that's 3 a.m. for me. So now we're working around that as well.
But. Yeah, that's definitely an issue that I've had to play with because I'm from the East Coast, but I also lived in Chicago for a while, which is central. Then I was in California for a while. So the time differences are always such a huge factor that we have to keep into mind. So doing like, I get up really early. And I would love to like jump on a call at 5, 6 a.m. But you're right. It's 3 a.m. for Californians. And that just doesn't work. So,
yeah. You know, so it's, we're working on structuring more times where it's still early for them. So they're getting up and getting stuff done early in the morning. But like not that early.
I like that idea you have of telling them to get up a little bit early because, you know, we don't really necessarily focus on in our programs on having a better structured life, but I think it's so important. And you know, if anyone watches me on Instagram, we always talk about, you know, do more than your competition. So if your competition is studying 8 hours a day, get up earlier and do a little bit more work. Stay, you know, if you're in rotations, go first, get there first, stay there late last. Make sure you're doing more than everybody else. And I love that you're just building better habits into your students also from undergrad, so they can then take that to med school, which then translates just into more success down the road. I think that's an amazing idea to implement.
Yeah. Love it. No, I'm glad you're able to kind of, I don't even know if I like verbalized it as well as you just did, but like that was the goal. It's like, I enjoy like teaching these habits to students and like realizing like I can't teach cell biology any better than any of the amazing other great videos that are out there. My program wasn't supposed to be like, I'm just going to remake a bunch of content videos. Like the goal is like, let's make them better people and students. Yes, and that's going to get them better results in the long term than anything else. And a lot of this other stuff they can do on their own. And that's what I'm trying to get the students to be able to do, which has been very rewarding.
I absolutely love the idea. And I wish we could convince more of our students to take that approach of just improve your life overall. And then it spills over. Unfortunately, everyone just wants that structured, for us at least, CS prep. You know, they don't want anything else. They just want that. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of, so we give them what they want, but then we slip in all of the tidbits that will hopefully help them become better overall. So absolutely love it. How much time on a weekly basis do you think it takes you to effectively run your business?
That's a good question. I definitely devote a lot of time to it. It comes in, the way I've been, because I get this one a lot, like, how do you do this while you're in medical school? It comes in waves for me. So if I'm like in the midst of my surgery rotation, I'll like, in terms of the business operations, I'll really go hands off and I'll just focus on, you know, doing the mentoring and stuff I need for the students, and then focusing on all my like coursework and studying and all of that. When I have more time, as I have breaks or I'm on an easier rotation, in just in terms of the amount of content you need to study, or like right now has been very helpful for me in just terms of the fact that we're online and our rotations are virtual, I've been able to really do a lot more in terms of business development and that type of stuff. If I were to put I'm probably doing a couple hours every day, even when I was still like, maybe not like in the midst of my surgery rotation or something like that, but like even when I was like on most of my rotations, like, so there's like when I'm, it's 10 at night and like I'm done with my studying, like the only thing I'm thinking about is like working on the business and developing it for students. So I'm never not doing something for the business. But I make sure to put the systems in place where like if I need to like focus on school, like I'm focusing on school. Obviously, like I'm a medical student and doctor, or future hope doctor first. But yeah, like I kind of work that into the schedule.
Yeah. And I'm sure you can empathize with the fact that if you own a business, you never really shut off the business mind. Your 24 hours a day is your business, regardless of what else you got going on, right?
It's insane. When something, a potentially big thing we have going soon that I can't really get into yet, but like when that came up, like I couldn't sleep that night. Cause like, just like I wake up with different ideas that I'm like, do I go back to bed or like I have to go write this down? Otherwise I might forget it or something. Like, yeah, so I totally know what you mean there.
Always write it down, because the best ideas sometimes are fleeting.
Exactly. So yeah, like you said, 24/7 pretty much.
That's good. No, I'm happy to hear that. It sounds like you got a really good system in place. When I was coming up with some questions to ask you, I tried to go back and put myself in the mindset of when I was in my first year, you know, from first year through fourth year, what are some of the things that I would have wanted to know had I had you? So hopefully anyone listening can get some value out of these questions. So let's say I'm starting my first year and I am in need of some help. If a student thinks that medicine is the career path for them, what would you recommend they do first and foremost? So I'm starting my first year, I decide medicine's for me. What would be the first thing you would recommend that I do?
Yeah, so first thing, like you're saying, freshman in college?
Yes, correct.
Essentially, okay. Yeah. There are two things that I think are really important for freshmen. First is to get some sort of shadowing experience to really see, like, unless you, that's how you came to that decision. A lot of people just think like, oh yeah, that sounds great in theory, but have no experience like following around a doctor, seeing what their day-to-day is like.
Yeah.
And then go through like 3-4 years, actually get that experience, realize, wait, I don't think this was for me. So getting that experience early, you don't have to get, a lot of students get very concerned about how many hours they need. The shadowing is mainly for you. Like you need, it's for you to see if this is the profession you want to spend the rest of your life working towards. So that's the first thing that I recommend. And I always tell students to get multiple different shadowing experiences, because you might see like a, one specific specialty that it might just so happen you really don't resonate with that specialty, but you think that's what like all physicians are like or how they operate. It also may be you like the specialty, but you just didn't click with that doctor that maybe you were working with or shadowing, and that might skew you away. So getting like a broad range of shadowing experience is very important. And then secondly, is to really focus on your academics early on. A lot of students make the mistake of trying to get involved in all these extracurriculars because they think that's important. And, you know, they get caught up with the, being a first year student in college, which is very exciting and fun. And I definitely recommend having fun while you're there. But you need to get serious with your academics first, and also realize some of the study habits you might have had in high school that got you a 4.0 pretty easily are probably not going to work when you get to these upper level and weed out science classes. And so you need to be strict early on, and then you could start to bring on more extracurriculars, get involved in more things. And once you kind of have the systems, you know, work for you. But trying to do too much at once when you just start, it is what I see hurts a lot of students early.
Okay. Good advice. Good advice. So, you know, I watched a bunch of your videos, and one of the things that I really liked you mentioned was finding a mentor. So let's say I'm a first year student and I want to find a mentor. What should I look for? And do you have any strategies to walk up to someone and say, hey, would you be my mentor? Obviously, you know, there's a, probably a specific way you want to sell the idea, because not everyone might want to do it. What would you recommend?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, so there's obviously going to be like your pre-health and pre-med advisor that's like, you know, paid by the university to guide you in that regard. A lot of times students don't get to meet with them so often. And to be honest, I hate to say this, sometimes they actually don't give the best advice and are don't really understand like the way the admissions process works as much as they think. Some are great, and just others, I've seen, I mean, I wrote a whole ebook that's titled My Pre-Med Advisor Told Me I Couldn't Do It, So I Did It Anyway. And that was like inspired by a lot of stories where pre-med advisors like said, I don't think that this might be like the field for you, which is a terrible thing to say to someone. And absolutely, like if a student puts in the work and like they start to figure it out, like they can become a doctor. In terms of like finding a mentor, I think like upperclassmen or people that are really close to where you want to be is actually the best place to start. So like that could be if you're a freshman, a sophomore, or a junior who's just taken those classes and really like knows, you know, the ins and outs of it. I wouldn't like, the way to approach it is I wouldn't, sometimes I think the best way is organically and just kind of like be proactive with like making relationships with these types of people. If they're, you know, if there's a pre-med organization on your campus, like go to that and start to just like network with fellow pre-meds. And you'll start to see some are really willing to, like a lot of pre-meds love to help out and others are like super cutthroat.
Sure.
And then once you kind of, you know, you start to ask questions, but don't make it like you're only just want help from them and that's it. Like you need to make it a kind of a two-way street, like show that, you know, you're willing to help them out with things. And I think that's kind of how you can start to foster or more of an organic relationship. I don't personally, and I think I know there are lots of different like methodologies of like how to approach getting a mentor and like what to say. I don't like just like cold asking someone like, hey, will you mentor me? I think like building somewhat of an initial relationship and then like, then you can go in for, I really appreciate everything you're doing for me. Do you mind, like, if when things come up, like, I like refer to you, like, you've been such a great resource. You kind of like boost their ego a little bit, and they're going to be willing to help out. And I find that most people, especially in medicine, like, love giving back. So it just a little bit of organic, and then you can go for that, like, make it a formal type mentorship. And I would say that's a pretty good way to approach it. I'm curious if you have like other ways that you recommend to students.
I think in sales, we call that like a warm lead, right? You don't want to just walk up to someone and say, hey, you want to buy my product? What you want to do is introduce them to the product slowly over time. And then when they're ready, say, hey, I have this if you're interested. The same thing applies here, right? Like you said, you want to network and meet people and let it happen organically. There's this theory in marketing where someone needs to see your product or service 7 times or touch you, you know, not physically,
touch points seven times
before they're ready to buy. And I think the same methodology applies here 100%. And I wouldn't really, aside from, you know, going to networking events in person, I would also recommend if you have social media like Instagram, you can use that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, now instead of just locally, you could be countrywide. So
100%. For whatever reason, when you asked that question, I was just thinking like at school. Like
no, no, no. That's kind of what I was pointing at. Yeah.
The mentorship that you can get online now is just, it's insane.
Yeah.
I try to give out, like, I'll try to answer as many questions as I can. Like sometimes my DMs are just flooded to the point where I can't, imagine. But like, there's a ton of students out there that like, and medical students that are willing to like answer questions and help pre-meds as long as you're, like willing to reach out and ask for it. The one thing I will say though is as a pre-med student and med student and just in general, like you're gonna get a lot of advice from everyone and everyone thinks they know best. So just like take anything you hear with a grain of salt, like even me. And like I spend all my time making sure I'm up to date, researching like the best like admissions advice and talking with deans and seeing like what they're thinking about and stuff like that. But even me, like you should take everything you hear with a grain of salt and like you make your own decisions in the end. Don't just like blindly follow anyone.
No, absolutely. Excellent advice. I love that. So you touched on extracurriculars earlier, and this is one I was really looking forward to hearing your point of view on. So a lot of people, and myself included, when it comes to, you know, getting into med school, we know extracurriculars are important. Do you recommend focusing on extracurriculars that are more linked to medicine, or do you recommend focusing on extracurriculars that you're more passionate about and that passion will come through when you go to apply and maybe talk about it in an interview?
I would absolutely say the latter.
Yeah.
I tell the favorite piece of advice I get to tell students is like, oh, you're interested in doing this dance club, then you should absolutely spend more of your time doing that. Take on a leadership position in it and enjoy it. It's not only going to be better for you because it's going to balance you in regards to, you know, you have your entire pre-med life. Like it's impossible for a pre-med to escape different like pre-med, like the shadowing, the clinical, maybe like they join a pre-med club or something like that. But you don't need to do everything only associated with that. It becomes too much. And then you lose your identity outside of that. And so like the most excite, like I think I made a video about this, but like 90% of my interviews for medical school, I was talking about like my role on the club soccer team more than I was talking about like, you know, being like pre-med and doing clinical. I mean, obviously that comes up and it's in your apps, but like when you're in an interview, like people want to connect with you like on a more human level and just get to know who you are. And the best way to do that is to show that you have passions outside of medicine.
And I could be wrong here, but I think that if I was interviewing someone, I would want someone who's more well-rounded and who has other interests, as opposed to someone who's just very narrow-minded in things that are specifically in medicine, because I might not think that they're genuine and authentic if they're just way too perfect on paper.
No, 100%. And I mean, like, there's just no way maybe it's very rare, but the only thing you like is everything just associated with pre-med. Like you want to show that you have outside interest and how are you going to contribute to that class and give a unique perspective because of your other experiences. And that's what admissions committees are looking for a lot of the time. So definitely recommend in terms of extracurriculars, doing things that you truly are passionate about and enjoy. And especially those things that are outside of medicine. And also use college as a time to learn maybe things that you you might enjoy that you've never had the opportunity to do. Like, you can
definitely
spend like a semester like trying out a couple of different clubs or extracurriculars. And I always say don't get involved in too much, because then you spread yourself too thin. But you can like go to the intro meeting, and if you think you don't like it, then don't join that one, and then go to the next one and see different things that you might, you know, find that you absolutely love. And you like, I never knew I liked entrepreneurship so much, and then I started, and it turns out like it's like a big part of like who I am now. Yeah. But I wouldn't have known that unless I tried it. So that's kind of what I recommend to students too.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. I was watching another video where you discuss study partners or groups of study partners. I'm curious if you're recommending that your students look for a study partner or study partner groups. What are some key things that you would say look out for, and what would be some red flags you'd say, if you see this, stay away?
Yeah, good question. So I think study groups can be good when done, used effectively, but they can become a distraction. So if a group is too big, or if like the flow of the group is like, you know, it ends up being just like gossiping the whole time, or like sometimes if you're too good friends with someone, sometimes you're end up not being productive. So I would say like find someone who it's more like helps hold you accountable. And also teaching is one of the best ways to learn. So if you can like, you know, have one or two people where you guys are like trying to each explain a topic to each other. And then, you know, maybe like you each assign yourself something, and then for that session, you teach it to each other, you listen, you talk about it, and you really work with the material. That's gonna really help you learn. But if the study group becomes like 5-6 people, and like there's, it starts to actually become less effective. So I think definitely make sure like you're looking out for, to answer your question, people who get distracted easily, and maybe that might not be the best person to study with. And also, someone that really is willing to hold you accountable, and that you work well with. And it's okay if there's like a good friend that you have that's not that person, or you try studying with someone and you don't think it's helpful. I don't think a lot of your studying needs to be done in groups. I think a lot of it, if you have good study habits on your own, can be done independently. But I think having a group, one, two other people, can be a nice way to, you know, first socialize a little bit, but also like practice teaching things. Cause I know a lot of students feel weird, like speaking out loud just to themselves or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, and it's good to like bounce ideas off of it and talk through concepts. So that's what I'd be looking for.
Do you think there's a perfect number of people in the group, including yourself? Like, is two better than three, or what do you think?
I would imagine there are studies done on this that I just am not up to date on. I think I've looked into, I think it's like 2 to 3 people that are pretty good for a group. I think as it gets larger, it becomes less effective. I'd have to look into it before I give like an official recommendation, but I'd say I find groups of 3 or 4, and sometimes just like 2 people is like the way to go.
Yeah, that's, I would have to agree. Awesome. Aside from the core requirements in your pre-med, like you have, you know, your chemistry, your biology, your physics, do you recommend students focus a lot on sciences, and do you think it's beneficial, or do you think sticking to the cores that they need and then expanding themselves to other areas, you know, like social sciences, you know, completely different things, is a good idea? What do you recommend with your students?
Yeah. So now medical schools do look for like usually at least 2 social science classes, and like psych and soc are on the MCAT. So I usually have all of the students at least take, they don't have to take those 2 classes to do well on the MCAT. You can totally self-study it, but I usually look for like 2 social sciences or something like that. And then I do actually, for a lot of students that come to me, they end up a lot of times, like let's say if they come to me by junior year and their GPAs are not as high as they would like it to be, medical schools want to see that they're comfortable that student can perform academically. So especially like, as you know, if they do poorly freshman, sophomore year, like they can recover, but you have to show by junior, senior year, as you're about to apply, that you can get A's or like pretty good grades in these hard science classes. So if they get to me at that point, I will recommend taking upper level sciences that are classes that they'll probably take in medical school. So like anatomy and physiology, immunology, micro, these are things that you can take in undergrad.
Yeah.
And if you do well in that, it'll be helpful for you because you're going to see that again in med school. And 2, like now admissions committees are like, all right, they're taking these challenging classes, they're actually doing well in them. So now we're more comfortable that they kind of like pass that academic threshold where we know that they could also excel at our medical school. So I do recommend sciences. I also think it's important to like get a breadth of other classes, which is why like I tell students, you can realistically major in whatever you want as a pre-med, as long as you're taking those core requirements. Definitely, if like you're really passionate about art history, that's a unique perspective that you can bring as a pre-med student, as long as you're obviously taking the core requirements, doing well in them, but you have all these art history classes, that's really cool for a student. But yeah, for not every student will I recommend going to take a bunch of other classes, especially if I think you need to start working on showing that you can do well in science classes. So it's kind of, it becomes a student by student basis.
So with your company, the pre-med consultants, you do take each student individually and go through their grades and discuss with them your best recommendations?
Exactly. Yeah, that'll be like the, once they join the first session that they'll have with me, it will kind of go through everything and I'll like see where they're at. Sometimes it'll be like, all right, you're already graduated and like your GPA is not near where it needs to be. Like a post-bac might be a good option for you, where there's a couple of different post-bac program like options where, like, for example, some are for career changers where you were never pre-med, you're working in a career, and then you realize, all right, now I want to go into medicine. You do a post-bac. The other type of post-bac is like a grade enhancing post-bac where it's students that struggled academically in undergrad and really like are now kind of almost wanting a second shot at it and getting serious. And so that's something I might recommend. So it completely is tailored to that individual student and where they're at in the process.
That makes sense. All right, let's shift gears a little bit into MCAT prep. Now, this is obviously a massive topic. So without going into too much detail, can you give me the basic outline or the basic structure that you recommend on how to tackle MCAT prep? So just a basic overview.
Absolutely. Basically, it breaks down, I think, into like pretty much three pillars. So you have what I highly recommend for students is taking a question-based approach to the MCAT. Okay. Instead of like spending a ton of time doing like the content and reading through all the textbooks and then forgetting all of it at the end, I have them doing questions very early on. So for me, I have like them doing UWorld, which is now has an amazing MCAT product, just I'm sure you're familiar with
Of course.
With USMLE. So now that's like included in my program and I have them doing that much earlier than most students would think they would have started.
Sure.
I use that. Then I have them take a spaced repetition approach with Anki flashcards. So I kind of teach them how to do, you make flashcards and continuously see the information like in properly spaced intervals so they're not forgetting it, because unfortunately there's just a ton of information to memorize on the MCAT. Same thing for USMLE. So I have them doing that. And then also there is like the content. If there's certain things that they've like never even, if sometimes students take the MCAT without taking like a psych class, but psych is a major topic on the MCAT, then like I will show them like the videos to go and watch to kind of at least get that first pass of the information. But yeah, the main approach that I teach students to take is question-based with spaced repetition starting from the very beginning of their prep.
What's a time frame you recommend someone prep for the MCAT?
So in my program, I laid it all out so that you can do it in 16 weeks. I have like a 16-week program, which you can technically do at a faster pace if you need, or a slower pace. It's going to depend on how much that student has going in their life.
Sure.
If you're really not doing anything, I think for most students, if they're treating it like a 9-to-5 job type thing and they're really focused every day, 5 to 6 days a week, then it's about 3 months of prep.
Okay.
But I see a lot of students that are either working a part-time job or they're in classes while they're doing it. And then it goes from anywhere from like 4 to 6, sometimes even more if it has to be. The best thing is though, when you're using like Anki flashcards and this type of approach, you're not really forgetting the material as long as you're staying consistent with it. So that's kind of how I have them approach it. I always recommend though, in the weeks leading up to the MCAT, to have a dedicated study period, similar to like how most medical students have dedicated time.
Yeah.
It's like I don't care what you have to do. If you have to like take vacation for your job, or that's what you have to do. Like I need 3 to 4 weeks at least of the only thing you're doing is MCAT. And usually I like that to be more like 6 weeks leading up to the exam.
Okay. Wow. Have you noticed a difference between students who really stretch out their prep period versus those who try to do it full time in a more condensed period? A difference in score, or is it not really, does it not really matter that much?
That's a good question. It's tough to say. Like I'd have to look at my like data, but because a lot of times it's like the student themselves is what I could tell like will affect their score. I don't know for like if it's spaced out. Okay, this is what I find actually. for students that end up spacing it out very long, like 6-7 months, they never get into a flow of like really like consistent studying. It's like start, stop, start, stop. And that ends up affecting their score. And I find that they end up scoring worse because of that. I think if you're like going to have a 6-month, 7-month study period, but you're keeping up with questions every day, but maybe doing a smaller amount than you would if you were doing it 3 to 4, maybe it's like 15 questions a day, mm-hmm. but you're keeping up with your flashcards and you're watching one video or two videos every day and you stay constant with that. And then you have obviously a good dedicated period right before. I don't think that would affect it as much as if like that same student did it in a 3-month to 4-month window. But what I find is the ones that are dragged out, they never get that consistency. Sure. For the most part.
So as with everything, consistency really is a key to success when it comes to doing well in the MCAT, just like with step one, CK, whatever it may be. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the principles I teach them is like the same things that you see most medical students doing for their board exams.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right. So we went through the pre-med curriculum. We went through MCAT. Let's say we got to the point of medical school interviews now. So I have two questions for you. So when it comes to the interview, when we deal with our students, because you know you take them into med school, we take them from med school to residency. When we're telling our students like how to focus on doing well in the interviews, we tell them that you have to realize these people who are interviewing you, they want to make sure that your personality fits with the personalities in the program because they want to work with someone they can tolerate for 3 to 5 years. When it comes to getting into med school, is there something similar where they're looking for personality, or is there something specific you think that they're looking for when they're interviewing med students?
Yeah, it's definitely a big component, but what I will say is each med school views the interview differently.
Okay.
So like I have spoken to, let's say, admissions committee members where they're like, the interview is more like, make sure you don't screw it up, rather than like, this will get you in. Then there's other schools where it's, and then like they, you know, as long as that went well, based on what they thought about the application as a whole, and then they vote on it, that's kind of what's getting in. But then there are other schools where it's like, everybody's on the same playing field now that you've gotten an interview. I don't care like what your app said beforehand, whether you were like stellar versus like, if you had the interview, then you're in the next phase of the application process. And now it's more like, do we see you as a great fit for this school? And sometimes, you know, that happens to be with a little bit of luck if you vibe with your interviewer specifically, but they're making that decision. But then there's also like multiple mini interviews. I don't know if you're familiar with those, where you have like it's like 9 stations and it's supposed to like be less biased because like you get evaluated at each station, which is a couple of minutes long. And so like then they'll take that into consideration. Like, and if you have one bad room, like it might not be the end of the world, but in general, I would still agree with you. Like they're looking to see like, is this someone we want a part of our class? Because its residencies are smaller, I think there gets a little bit more focus on like, is this that person we want to spend the next 5 years with, or however long that residency is, versus is this someone we for medical school can see contributing and adding a unique perspective to our class and fits with our school mission and philosophy? There's still all the things they're looking for.
Sure. Okay. Makes sense. I was watching one of your YouTube videos yesterday and you gave some advice that I thought was fantastic, which was record yourself answering interview questions. Love it. My question for you is, do you recommend students start with recording themselves and fine tuning, you know, their facial expressions, their delivery, or do you recommend they master the content first and then focus on fine tuning their delivery?
Mm-hmm. I'm cool with like either for a student, to be honest. It's some students just don't feel comfortable ever saying their answers out loud, mm-hmm. which is why I bring up the recording, because that's going to force them to say it out loud. Yeah. And you need to hear yourself saying these answers. Like even it, for example, like I've done a bunch of these podcast interviews. So when I get asked questions, I kind of know like what my go-to response will be. And I don't have to think about it as much as I used to when mm-hmm. I started out. So that's kind of like what I'm trying to get them to do on their own. I think it's totally okay if they were to, you know, go through a lot of the basic common interview questions that they know they're going to be asked, like, why do you want to be a doctor? Tell me about yourself. And they spend some time like jotting down bullet points of, you know, what are the key points that I want to hit for myself? Like, and what do I want to get across in my answer? Kind of almost like getting a general script, but you never want to have it fully scripted where you're like a robot saying an answer. Just kind of like key points. And then after you do that, then you can go into recording yourself so that you could start to practice saying it and whatnot. Now, if let's say you're having writer's block and you can't actually get anything on the page and figure out what you want to say, you could just try like answering the question, seeing maybe that answer you think is horrible, and then doing it a couple different iterations until you figure out stuff that you like, and then you mix and match, and then now you're really forming your you're really putting together that interview response that you want when you get asked that question in an interview.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, my final question to you, and I don't know if you'll be able to answer this one, but let's give it a shot. What's one quality that you think that as a whole most good medical candidates possess that can give them an advantage when it comes to getting into medical school?
I would say internal drive. Like you need to, like I work with a lot of students and I could tell sometimes it's like they don't really want it. They think they do, or you know, it sounds like in theory good that like, you know, this is a safe path. I'm gonna be a doctor, like my parents want me to be a doctor. And this is a long, hard career, as I'm sure you're very well aware of. And so if you don't really have that drive that you want it for yourself, I think all the things that then stem from that are going to put you at a disadvantage versus someone who like is just super ambitious, really knows that this is what they want, and like they're going to take those extra steps to really do what they need to do. Like there'll be students that ask me questions and I'll be like, and I'm happy to answer any questions, but it's like you could have taken initiative to like find that answer online. Like sometimes like I know the answer is literally just on like the
Google.
AAMC website, and it's like taking the easy way out sometimes. And so like the students that really excel are the ones that don't take the easy way out.
That's a really good point you bring up. We have a lot of same thing. We get questions day in and day out, and a lot of the times it's a simple just Google the question or go to the ECFMG, go to USMLE, and the answer's right there. So yeah, I mean it's good to see that, you know, you're experiencing the same thing across, you know, a younger generation. We're getting at the older generation, but I
I
agree.
think human behavior doesn't change as
No,
much as you would
not at
think.
all. Awesome. That's a really good answer, and I agree with you. That's not what I thought you were going to say, but I really like that answer, and
What
I think that's a really good one.
did you think I was gonna say?
I thought you might have said empathy, just because I think as a physician you have to be super empathetic, just, you know, across the board. But the internal
I
drive,
was
I think internal drive to make it is definitely something you need.
right.
Just having
So
empathy alone isn't enough.
I would say like for yeah, to be a great physician, I think that's super important. But I know there's a lot of like empathetic students that are really caring, and it's just, but that extra
The drive's
drive,
not
that's
there.
what for getting accepted into like a, I mean, it's like only 40% about every year get accepted. That means the majority of students that apply to medical school are not getting
Right,
in.
right.
So you need to really, like you said earlier, you need to be doing things that other people aren't willing to do.
Yeah, that really is the key to getting ahead, being willing to do what everybody else isn't willing to do. And as an entrepreneur, as a physician, as a med student, that really is, if there's one, you know, secret, I think that is it. Just going above and beyond in all respects. Absolutely love it. Adam, thank you so much for your time today. This was a really good interview. Where can people find you on social media?
So on social media, I'm just Adam underscore Nessum, my name. You just search my name, I definitely will pop up. And then my website is thepremedconsultants.com, where there's a bunch of information
All right.
on our program and everything like that.
All right. So guys, if you're listening on the podcast, we will put the links below. If you're on YouTube listening or watching, the links will be in the description. Also, I know you mentioned you have a ebook, so I'm going to grab the link from you afterwards, and I'll also provide that for everybody if they want to download that. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, this was super eye-opening and educational for everybody. And guys, if you are in pre-med or you know someone who is in pre-med and you need some guidance, the pre-med consultants, Adam Nessum, definitely there with the knowledge and expertise to help. So, Adam, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. All right, take care. Thank you guys for stopping by. We'll see you on the next episode.